coming to get you, Barbara.
I don't know what you come to do, but I come to praise name.
Because you'll never be anything but a common frump whose father lived over a grocery store and whose mother took in washing.
Hey, y'all, welcome to Who Shout Ya? It's your boy, I'm your host, Ricky Carmona. Before I introduce everybody here today, I want to let y'all know we're actually recording this episode a few weeks in advance. This is before the new year. So right now you're hearing 2018 Ricky, but I'm talking to, like, the future, though. 2019, you're in the future right now. Shout out to the future, though. Shout out to the future in 2019. That's what's up. Thank you for joining us on this New Year's, our new year, this first episode. And here he is with me right now, to my right, film reviews editor at The Wrap. It is Alonzo Duralde. Alonzo, what is good with you, sir?
I kind of like a new year. I don't do resolutions.
You look great this new year.
Oh, thank you.
Already, you're looking good. Starting off strong.
I've tried. I don't do resolutions because, let's face it, January's the worst. So, like, why you would then suddenly want to go hard shift from the awesomeness of the holidays to, like, nope, deprivation. Forget that. But I like the idea of a year where I'm not behind yet on documentaries that I need to see and haven't.
Okay.
You know, just generally, there's a sense of a clean slate. Mm. It won't last very long, but let's enjoy it for these few moments while we have it.
Yes.
That's what's good.
Yes. You're talking about Dana Carvey's clean slate. Is that correct?
Yes.
No one ever talked about
Memento. Dana Carvey's completely ripped that movie
Thank
off.
You. Finally. See?
How has there not been litigation?
Finally. Thank you. Thank you. The other voice you heard right there, producer, film festival programmer, the dope rhyme sayer, Drea Clark is back with us.
Yay!
Happy New Year, Drea.
Thank you. I'm super excited about the gigantic burlap bag with the money sign on it, stuffed full of cash that I found. I'm sure just at the beginning of this year. It was such an exciting thing.
Congratulations.
It for sure happened.
Yes. So we're starting it. Sounds like we're starting a GoFundMe for Drea this year.
I don't need funding. I want, like, obnoxious money. Yes, I want money so I can, like, buy you, like, oh, Ricky, I saw a literal sleigh. I got it for you.
You want to dress up like the Monopoly guy?
Yes. for a Tuesday. Yeah, that's what I would like.
That's what's good with you, Drea?
That is not what's good with
okay.
me. It's just,
me for a loop,
I just happened to find that money. You're
right,
just
sure.
reminding me that we're in 2019.
Yes.
And I'm, you know, I'm long past the excitement of all of that cash that I found.
And your flying car looks boss.
Thank you.
Yes.
Thank you.
Yes.
I had it special done, flames, the whole thing.
I like when somebody pers their car getting work on is special done. I had it special done.
Yeah. As you can tell, I'm absolutely a car person.
Yeah. So, I like automobiles.
Don't
She's
even
got all
worry
the
about
lingo
that.
Down.
Yeah. You meant my car, right? Yeah. I drive car. What's actually good with me is there's a paperback of my favorite comic finally came out, like, all together. And it is a comic called Abbott. This was its first series. I highly recommend checking it out. The author is named Saladin Ahmed. Saladin Ahmed. And it's so good, and I can't believe April's here, because it is about a black female investigator in the 1970s in Detroit who's, like, trying to uncover police brutality and corruption in the city, and she stumbles on supernatural forces and, like, a whole
yes.
secret elite cabal, and it's so good, and the whole series is, like, a full season, so it has a full arc to it. I always recommend going to your local comics purveyors, mm-hmm. but you can buy it on Amazon, you can buy it on all sorts of things, and Saladin Ahmed is now, he's currently writing, the Kamala Marvel, the new
Kamala
Ms. Marvel.
Khan, Ms. Yeah. Marvel. Okay, cool.
Kamala Marvel. Yeah. I'm as hip with comics lingo as I am with cars. Yes, the new Ms. Marvel. But anyway, he's an amazing writer, and it's beautifully drawn, and it's historical and has, like, period feel to it and is a full story, and I highly recommend checking it out.
Hey, Abbott.
Abbott.
I totally thought you were saying Kamala Harris.
Yeah.
Yeah, me too. I was like, hey, she can do everything, yo. She can do no wrong, this one.
Yeah.
She has not made it through Infinity Crisis, but we're hoping. in the reboot that they're going to bring her back.
You sound like a real Drea Clark.
Oh, that other voice that you heard there, that wonderful laugh. Somebody else, I'm glad somebody else in there has a solid laugh like that. If you listen to Max Fun, you know her voice. She has a special on Netflix, Lower Classy. Fuakata. She's going to be going out on tour in 2019.
Yes.
Fíjate. Ladies and gentlemen, it's the one and only Cristela Alonso.
What's going on? That was the most ethnic intro you
Yes. Wait, hold on. We've got to make room for the mariachi band.
Let's go. I thought you were going to read the entire Taco Bell menu before you announced my name.
I'm going to read all my favorite lyrics from War. We can start playing Lowrider, please.
I know, now we got to pay George Lopez at that point.
Yeah, we go. It's a process.
The 9:10 screening of Pinheiro is now seated.
I had a feeling this episode was going to be brown as fuck. I ain't gonna lie. I really did. Cristela, thank you for being here.
Thanks for having
me. Absolutely. I was looking forward to this. What's good with you, yo?
What's good? Well, you know, all of you are living in 2019. I'm the ghost of 2018.
Oh, shit.
I'm still living in December now.
Keep up.
Yeah, come with us. Come here. Cross the bridge. We're on the other side.
Oh, you know, me and any bridge or border is not really welcomed right now. I've been waiting at that bridge for 3 months now, and they keep denying me. Things are good. Really? I'm actually going to Mexico tomorrow.
Oh damn!
Yeah, I'm going there for like a week. I'm gonna go hang out and stuff. So it's cool.
Excellent.
As an adult, I go to Mexico to explore the fun part of Mexico.
Okay.
Because when I was a kid, I used to spend a lot of time in Mexico in a town named Reynosa, Tamaulipas, which is a border town right across from where I grew up in, and my mom's village named El San Carron, which is like in San Luis Potosí. And you always know, like they were very poor villages, like no running water, no electricity. So like when people tell me that they love Mexico, like they always mention like Acapulco.
Sure, of course, like, yes.
Cancun is the best.
Yeah,
oh, it's my favorite.
Like, no, I only go where like relatives live, you know?
Yeah,
yeah.
Where there's that fork in the road, we take that other road.
Yeah, yeah.
Like, doesn't have lights and shit.
You could sponsor me for a cup of coffee. And then my family would be like, what's coffee? We can't afford it. But I'm going there for a week and I'm really excited.
Oh, fantastic. Well,
that's
great. Well, I hope you have a lovely trip.
Yeah, thanks.
I'm glad that we have you here before you go on the trip.
You know, my favorite part is converting American money into pesos. Cause like
you feel like a baller,
right? Dude. Right. I feel like Scrooge McDuck. I just want to swim around.
Yeah.
I feel like I can buy a country. Like,
yes.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
I just go in there. I'm like, yes, yes.
I remember first I went to a movie theater in Colombia and they were like, whatever, 15,000 pesos, and I was like, God. To watch The Untouchables? Jesus Christ.
I know. It's
sorry,
like,
Mom.
Was this a showcase showdown on The Prices Right? 15,000.
You guys, I'm kind of sad to discover this bag full of money I found is actually pesos.
Yes.
I'm realizing I might have to return my flying car. Shit.
I love that in like 2 weeks, we ended up having the technology of having flying cars.
Yes, yes.
2018.
The future. It's all there.
Isn't it funny when you look at when you watch Back to the Future Part 2 and you're like, man, we were off.
We had, right? Ambitious.
We were so off.
Oh, big talk. But
yes.
No. Ricky, what's good?
Oh, damn. Awesome. Oh, I've lost my touch.
You know, a lot of times my close personal friends will ask me, Ricky, why do you always do dope shit? And I'll say, thank you for asking, close personal friend of mine, Barack Obama. This past weekend, I was able to do something. I mean, I love going to the movies, always. That's part of the reason I host this goddamn show. But Cinespia, depending on where you're from, they had the screening for The Nightmare Before Christmas at the Palace Theater in downtown Los Angeles. And I went to that. And I'm not going to lie, I'm not even the biggest fucking fan of that movie. It's fun and it's, you know, like, it's entertaining. But there's something about, like, dressing up in a goddamn suit. Mm-hmm. Everybody, like, they encourage, like, mm-hmm. you to, like, dress up either in the theme of the movie. This is the holidays. Dress up like you know how you would for the holidays.
Do you have a suit with, like, the big Jack Skellington shoulders coming out of it?
No, but I had some, like, really cool, like, socks that kind of, like, gave it a little bit of a Jack Skellington thing. But nice. I wore, it was more like a green, like, and blue and red plaid suit with, like a dark
black
shirt.
Were you in a zoot suit?
It was the zoot suit. I was dressed like Holiday Edward James almost.
It's like all I want for your life.
You know, for Christmas.
Holiday Edward James almost Christmas is who I was. That's who I was.
It's a clause.
Yes.
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 Stand and deliver the gifts. I can go all day, guys. I can go all day. Go ahead.
Oh, that's fantastic. And it was just like a great experience. It was one of those where it was like, it's just more fun to be a part of something like that. Like, people were like singing along to the songs. I mean, it's granted, like, it's a newer, now I think it's a common thing, but I mean, when we were growing up, you couldn't drink in a movie theater.
Right.
There's something about having a nice drink and eating popcorn and watching a movie with, like, grown-ass adults who are just, like, acting, you know, like they're 15 again or you know, whatever, like, that peak age was for The Nightmare Before Christmas. It was just a goddamn hell of a trip. Fantastic way to one of the last times I'll be in a movie theater for 2018. Just fantastic. Well, we are actually going to Mexico very shortly because we are going to be talking about Alfonso Cuarón's Roma on this episode.
Oh,
very excited about talking about that. We are going to be casting our own biopics. That should I like that look, Drea. I like that look. Drea got terrified. And as always, we will have our staff picks at the end of the episode. So we are going to take a break right now, and when we come back, we'll be talking about Roma. You're listening to Who Shot Ya?
Hello, Internet. I'm your husband, host Travis McElroy.
And I'm your wife, host Teresa McElroy.
And together we present Schmanners.
It's extraordinary etiquette
for ordinary occasions.
We explain the historical significance of everyday etiquette topics, then answer your questions relating to modern life.
So join us weekly on MaximumFun.org or wherever podcasts are found.
No RSVP required.
Check out Schmanners.
Manners, Schmanners. Get it?
Welcome back to Who Shot Ya? I'm your host, Ricky Carmona. Joining me in the studio today are...
Alonzo Duraldi.
Drea Clark.
Cristela Alonzo.
Today we are... Fantastic. Solid podcast voice.
It's because of the movie. Yeah. I gotta get in the mood.
Oh, I am going to be hitting those Alfonsos, those Cuarons hard.
You know,
exactly. Sí. Ya tú sabes.
You know, we're talking about a movie set in Mexico.
Exactly.
I have never felt more Minnesotan than this.
You know... This is, I mean, and we're going to talk about it, but this is a very universal movie. It's a very personal movie. Alonzo, go ahead and give us a quick synopsis of it first, please.
For further confusion, you already have an Alonzo on the show. You brought in another Alonzo to talk about a movie directed by a guy named Alfonso. So, well done, everybody.
That's actually amazing.
I love that. I just realized
that. Are you Columbo? That was a mystery you just cracked.
Everybody have your scorecard ready at home or you're going to get totally lost. Okay. So, all right, this is Alfonso Cuarón's very kind of autobiographical film about his own upbringing, particularly viewed through the lens of the housekeeper who took care of the family, who is played by the resplendent Yalitza Aparicio. And over the course of the film, we see the family going through weathering issues with the father walking out of them, the maid herself, Cleo, is impregnated and abandoned by her boyfriend. There is upheaval in Mexico. There is upheaval in the family. And while she is treated as a member of the family and an employee of the family at the same time in a very strange confluence that existed in a lot of families mm-hmm. and with a lot of housekeepers and the movie is very delicate about presenting sort of all the aspects of this. We see all of them endure and flourish.
Yeah. Yes. It's as beautiful as it sounded right there, y'all. It's as beautiful as it sounded right there.
Not a lot of plot here is what I'm trying to say.
But so much story.
But so much happening.
So much story.
So much characterization.
And to add to what you were saying earlier just now, Drea, is like, it's a very universal story, even though this is in Mexico and the movie is in Spanish. It's very universal. It's very personal. This might be our most personal discussion yet, I think. The way Hollywood today tries to kind of resonate with us on a personal level with movies, I feel, is through nostalgia, which is why we're getting all these superhero movies. Here's how you remember you're a kid. Remember all these toys you bought. And this movie goes the complete opposite direction of that. It really just hits you with a personal, intimate story and family. The importance of your real family and the importance of kind of like this extended family being Cleo. How did this movie relate to you all personally? I mean, Drea, you're getting whiter before me as I look at you.
Which is hard. You guys have seen me.
but I have to think. I mean, I saw this movie with my girlfriend who's from Staten Island, from New York. She don't relate to like the Mexico aspects of it, but she related very much to this. She was crying her goddamn ass off during it. You know, like the story is there. We can relate to what we're seeing.
It's so relatable in that idea of sort of story versus plot. In hearing Alonso break down what this is about, it's one of those things that I do find it so universally opening and welcoming to people. And yet I know it's a film, if I tried to describe to people who wouldn't inherently be interested in seeing it, that I think would benefit so much from it, I would fail because I would be like, oh, well, it's sort of about this nanny housemaid and she's going through this stuff. She lives with this family. There's some things going on with the government. Like, nothing I do can convey that the minute it started, I was in their time and space. It's a time travel portal. There was this whole rush. I was there. It was frenetic. It was the most quickly moving. And I don't mean pacing because they would take these long, luxurious. Mm. I mean, like, eat your heart out, Wes Anderson, the dolly tracks on this mother. Like, there were these beautiful, long shots. Yet, there was so much going on in every frame. There's something to see the whole time. And the universality of it that you're talking about in terms of family, in terms of, I'm very lucky that my parents are still together, which is a rarity. Mm-hmm. But like everyone else, like I grew up watching my friends' parents argue and being in those houses where you were sort of on the side. I also like nannied my way through college and so was literally the person holding other people's children and trying to like stay out of the way in strange things. There's just so many details of it that were so welcoming and so just, it's an embrace. It's just, you're in it the second it starts.
Yeah, yeah, very much so. Now, usually I'm like, hey, Casey, get a fucking funny motherfucker on the show, like for a guest, please. But I specifically wanted Cristela on this show. I mean, because the funny is already part of it.
I was going to say, where's this going?
I like to take the long road, y'all. You know this, how long I've been doing this
funny.
Now.
Get me Cristela.
Yes. Have you been talking to my former bosses? Go.
But there are certain connections I make to the movie being Latino that I see, but it's still kind of like a little distant because I'm Colombian and Cuban. I like so much want to know, like, just personally how you felt watching this movie, what the connections you had to you had to it.
You know, well, let me. But first
especially
of all,
like the fact that you're going to Mexico tomorrow. I don't know how recently you saw this movie.
I actually saw it today, it's like I saw it, and then you tend to forget things at times, especially when something moves with time so slowly that I wanted to make sure that I didn't miss something. Because now we live in a culture where everything is so fast paced, and you know, so many of us like to be on laptops while we watch movies or TV, and I don't know if we really pay attention. So right off the bat, I wanted to say that the pacing surprised me in a very good way, because I've actually argued about this before, where there were certain movies, my siblings were way older than me, so there were certain movies I didn't see that everybody saw because they didn't let me see them. Mm-hmm. So I remember when the movie Prometheus came out.
Yes. Yes.
Right? You know what I mean? Like, I'm really into sci-fi, anything like with aliens, whatever. Like, but I hadn't seen Alien. because I hadn't seen any of them because I had just not seen the franchise. Mm-hmm. So my boyfriend at the time said, well, you can't watch Prometheus if you don't watch Alien. Yeah. And we watched, so I watched Alien, and what I loved about Alien was that it took about 45 minutes to really understand what the story was. And I loved it because it was that time in cinema where the movie industry actually allowed the audience to be part of the story. And you actually taught the audience to think. And you actually taught them to trust their instincts and feel like they were part of the story too. You know, and it's weird because then I saw Prometheus, and I remember in the first 10 minutes they had a classroom scene where they told the plot of the movie. Yeah. You know what I mean? And yes. To me, I was like, whoa, like what happened? And it seems that with so many movies, we've lost the trust that we used to have with the audience. You know, so for me, when I realized that you actually had moments that were going to breathe, it really surprised me in a really good way. And because it did that, it really allowed me to connect more with the story on a personal level. Now, I got to tell you, my family, we're indigenous. And my family, we come from a little village in Mexico. We don't really know where we're from because the building that kept all our records burned down years ago. We weren't even sure how old my mom was. Mm. You know, my grandmother, my great-grandmother, like, they barely spoke Spanish. They spoke their language, you know. So I've been trying to...
Mixteca? Is that what they spoke?
Like, no. It's so familiar because, first of all, she looked like my family. You know what I mean? It's mm-hmm. And that is a big deal because I can tell you, you know, I was saying it before we sat down. It's like I have always been taught that people that look like me, like my skin tone and everything, we weren't attractive enough to be on TV, to be in film. We didn't have that, you know, like we didn't look like everybody. And when I saw her on the cover of Vogue in Mexico.
Yeah.
I was actually really moved in a way that I didn't realize I was going to be moved by. Having said that, though, the character caught me by surprise because I realized that my job, I do stand-up, and we tend to forget parts of our lives because we focus on what we are now. And seeing the movie today made me realize a lot of things about myself that I forgot. And I nannied for years, and I took care of my kids, my sister's three kids. I helped raise them. And it was weird to see that connection with the character because I realized watching the movie today that I don't have kids of my own because I already had those kids. You know what I mean? It's that connection where I gave my heart and soul to those three children, you know, and because of that, people don't understand that I don't have that motherly instinct that a lot of people maybe that haven't had children might have because I already went through it. And when I saw that in that story, when I saw that she was so devoted to the family and the kids were devoted to her, you know, and because the kids were devoted to her, the parents and the grandmother had to be devoted to her. You know, because it was about the kids. Mm-hmm. Then I realized that the kids were the ones that dictated the love. You know, they're the ones that dictated the ambiance, the environment. And for me, I feel like with my nephews and my niece, because they accepted and they realized what I did with them as children, I've always felt like that was enough for me. You know, and I think that the connection that she had when, you know, when she was trying to realize what happened with her, like when she was pregnant and everything, it's like it made me wonder how I would react to it because I've already gone through those feelings with my nephews and my niece. And also, I got to tell you, the boss, the mother of the family, what was the character's name? It's Señora Sofia.
Yeah.
So, you know, Señora Sofia, you know, I found it very interesting. My dad walked out on our family. So in a weird way, both women in that movie represented my mother. So it was weird because when I was seeing that, I was seeing like Señora Sofia struggle with trying to be strong for her kids. and not knowing what the hell is happening, you know, and started like trying to figure it out. But then also I saw Cleo and I was thinking, like, she's doing the best she can, and she doesn't have a lot of moments to be human because she's always working. And that's what my mom was too. You know, it's like that thing where like you don't have that obligatory monologue in this movie where Cleo has to talk about like, I left my village to go. You know what I mean? Like, you know, there's no time for that. She is surviving. She is working. And I love that because it shows we don't have to have that story. We don't have to have that moment. We can just let them be people.
Yes.
This is a story where we actually got to see the person as a human.
Yeah.
You know? And it, like, I loved that. I loved, as an actor, as a Latina, as a Mexican, you know, like, I saw her and I thought, how beautiful, yet so simple, and because it's so simple, so frustrating, that we have to wait till 2018 to see stories like this, where someone who takes care of a family, who's a domestic worker, who has the heart, can actually just show that they have the heart. And it's not about her trying to learn how to read, and it's not about her trying to, like, you know, it's just about her being her, you know? And for me, that journey, it reminded me of my first half of my life, because so many people assume, if they don't know me, they have no idea where I come from. And they don't understand that my life was so primitive. I lived in Mexico on and off when I was a kid. My, you know, my oldest brother was undocumented. He became a citizen 2 years ago. And it's funny because people assume that I could never come from that life because I speak so well. You know what I mean? Or you don't seem like you would, you know, and you realize the assumptions that come with it. But there was a layer of such reality from the simplicity that was heartbreaking, honest, in a comforting way for me.
Yeah. Yeah. You hit on something fantastic there. This is a movie where it's about people.
Yes.
You know, and Alonzo and I have talked about this on the regular on this show, where the movies that are get caught up in being about the cause, this is about the thing that they're going to overcome, that usually has to like somehow tie into their culture. And this is just the story. This is just
life.
Or there's like a magical, like you said, that in a different hands, what this would have been about is she would have like entered a singing competition. It would have been about, do you know what I mean? Like, ooh, if only she could get her dreams come true through this like, ridiculous way instead of
it was a different
her.
Love story.
Yeah.
It wasn't about her ending up with Fermin.
It's a real love story.
You know what I mean?
I had a really interesting time with this film kind of from the opposite way, because I'm like white Euro Spanish. My parents were both born in Spain. They emigrated to the United States in the 50s, and I was the youngest child, and we had a housekeeper, you know, not live in, but like 5 days a week. And she, I'm sure a chunk of what her job for a long time was helping raise me. And eventually, you know, she left because she had health issues, but like my parents supported her for the rest of her life. And I remember like we would go see her in the hospital because she was dealing with diabetes. I remember all of us going to her funeral. And, you know, it was this thing where like none of us would have ever used that like, oh, she's like one of the family, you know, thing. But she wasn't not one of the family. Mm-hmm. And I like that so much with how Cleo is handled here, where on the one hand, when she announces that she's pregnant, they don't kick her out. They immediately like make sure that she's taken care of and that she's seeing doctors and doing all the stuff that needs to be happening. And they're going to, you know, they're putting her up in the house. And they're taking her shopping for cribs, whatever. But at the same time, you know, she's still staying in that room at the top of the long stairs above the carport, you know. Mm-hmm. So there is a line of like, you're ish part of the family. And that's a thing that exists. And most movies either go too far in one side and make it too much, too chummy, or too far in the other where, like, the employers are just, you know, rotten people all the time. Mm-hmm. I thought that aspect of it was fascinating. And again, like you said, this movie tells you in the first 5 minutes, slow down, breathe, we're going to be here for a while. We're not going to zip through this story. You're going to watch her clean the fucking carport. And occasionally a plane is going to fly overhead. And she's going to keep cleaning the carport. And this is the pace. Everybody strap in for the pace.
Yeah. I thought something was wrong with Netflix.
With the water at the beginning.
I kept thinking it was like lagging. Freeze? I'm like, is it buffering? And then I realized, like, oh no, she's just using a hell of a lot of mop water.
I spent that whole first shot figuring out, I was like, you'd see the camera in that reflection. And then it was this dumb, because it goes for 5 minutes, and I was like, I guess you could composite it. How would I do that? Like, I just was like...
I love that you referred to that first shot as a portal, like what you're what you're looking at, because it really is. My brain went to, like, this is a mirror, this is a reflection of what we're going to see. Where hopefully, you know, you'll see yourself in it. Then the plane flies by, and then the water starts to hit the floor, and yeah, it just sets you up for this calm kind of,
it's
like
hypnotic.
Trust me, peaceful mm-hmm. peaceful ride. And there was like one moment very early on where I was like, I leaned over to my girlfriend. I was like, I love this movie. I love it. And it was because a conversation, every once in a while, usually when I've had one too many drinks, I'll be like, Sarah, here's what it was like when I went to Columbia. And I saw, and I had just, a few days ago, I had just told her this story about, like, it would be so strange because, like, we'd go out in the backyard of, like, where my family was, and it's not really a yard. It's just, like, dirt and shit, and there's, like, chickens walking around and a big-ass palm tree, and a cousin is fucking climbing to bring down a coconut. Like, I'm not speaking in hyperbole. Like, that's just shit you would see. But, I mean, I'm coming from, you know, I'm 12 years old in Chicago and looking at this stuff like, what the fuck? And then seeing my aunts wash our clothes not using a washing machine, just like machine, just like whipping the clothes on this like cement type thing. And that's one of the first things, you know, when she's not, like, after she's done mopping the floor, watching Cleo wash the clothes and like
run against,
yeah, and then go and lie down with the boy and, like, you know, try and be there for him. I was like, I love this movie.
That part where she was playing dead.
That's great.
Because, like, when she said that she liked being dead.
I prefer.
That right there is a line that I think so many people will throw away, but people that live that life realize that death is the only way they can take a break.
Mm-hmm.
And that's, you know, and for me, like I remember, you know, again, like my mom, like, working, like, a double shift at a Mexican restaurant. Like, you can't call in sick. You can't, you have to go. You know what I mean? Yeah. And it's like, when she said that, I got that. And we used to wash our clothes like that too. So that seemed familiar.
That would blow my mind. Like, I was like, what?
Yeah. You know?
Where's the machine at?
But the juxtaposition of that, because what was double crazy is right before that, when she's washing, she's listening to music and she looks generally happy to just be by herself washing.
Absolutely.
And I was like, oh, how nice for her. This moment of respite, which is like hard physical labor, like taking the flesh off her fingers. And my first thought was like, oh, she looks, what a peaceful moment for her.
Oh, she likes that.
And then her response to that is like, oh, being dead. This is where it's at. In talking about the idea of this film being hard to convey to people who wouldn't necessarily gravitate towards seeing it, but that I think should. Mm-hmm. I think the other side of it is this film has more to say about what's possible with cinematic expression and beautiful filmmaking than so many I've seen in so long. Like, you could break down so many different scenes of this and be like, do you understand what goes into the composition of that?
The forest fire.
Yeah.
Like, there's also these beautiful mirroring things, like the mop water at the beginning with the waves at the end. There is the most, I gasped out loud, frightening my cats. but there's this beautiful mirrored moment of when they're with the bougie families and they're like walking through, and this kid has this like fancy ass spaceman suit and he's tromping through, and I was like, nice. And then when she gets to the village, you see a kid kid coming in the opposite direction, like left frame, who's wearing like a bucket with a hole cut in it, but playing the same exact game. And he splashes through a whole different like puddle. And they're doing the same thing. Their boy's the same age. And I was like, oh my God, like you're either seeing those things as they're happening or you're not. Like, it's just the fabric of it. There's so much beauty in this film.
Where she's walking through the sort of poorer part of town where they don't even have sidewalks, it's just wooden planks, and in the background there's a campaign rally that ends with a human cannonball. And I'm like, oh my God, because that could have been such a like aggressively Fellini moment, but it just was there. Mm-hmm. And all of these things could be organic, like you're not stretching it for any of this, you're just putting it all there in this one long gorgeous shot, and you're like, oh yeah, this is the guy who made Gravity and Children of Men.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. So when he makes a movie about a maid, it's still going to be like this incredibly fucking awesome, like, you know, cinematic experience.
Yeah, yeah. He shot the movie himself.
Yeah.
He wrote it. Obviously, he directed it. It's a passion project for him. He said he wanted to make this movie right after Children of Men, but he said he didn't have the tools for it, and people thought they meant like, oh, but you just did Children of Men. You know what to do exactly with the camera. And he's like, no, I didn't have the emotional tools to like make this movie yet. It is a flat-out passion project. Usually those do not work out.
Not at all.
There's a history of that.
Yeah. What are some of the ones? I'm sorry.
Yeah, no. Just having the restraint to know he wasn't able to take it on at that point, it shows on the screen. Because someone with that foresight is going to do right by it versus the people, like I see it on a much smaller levels for festivals of people who are like, oh, I have, and the amount of people who want to tell a story about their own childhood and something they went through and don't really ever come up with a unique lens for it or a way in.
Just because it happened to you doesn't make
it to you. Exactly. And this is the opposite of that.
Yeah.
But no, yeah, the film history sort of littered with like, Heaven's Gate, you know, which now it does have its champions. But, like, that's a sort of classic example of somebody who is like, gonna cash in all my chits and make this movie. You know? And like, I always think of the one that always leaps to mind is Toys.
Oh,
Barry Levinson's Toys.
That was a passion project for him?
Yeah.
Oh, really?
That was a movie that Barry Levinson had written, like, in the early 70s or something.
Wow.
And it wasn't until after, like, Diner and, you know, I guess Good Morning Vietnam and a couple of other films. It was like,
I think that's post-Rain Man as well, right?
Yes. So you're right. Yep. So, again, I think it's you win that Oscar and then look out! You know? Toys was this thing that he'd been dying to do for the longest time. And, oof. That was like, oh, back in the drawer, you know?
Yeah, yeah. Oh, what's what was the Kevin Costner one? The Postman?
Yep.
Oh, I was like, yeah,
the Oscar the again.
Oh, there you go. Ooh.
There's a trend here.
That's Ooh. Why I'm never going to win an Oscar.
It ruins everything.
Exactly.
I don't think it's time yet.
I want to
be I don't think I'm emotionally prepared to win the Oscar yet.
I want to go back to Elisa Aparicio because that is my favorite performance of 2018.
Is that right?
Yes.
That's the one. Nice.
She never acted before. I think she's a school teacher or something. And she knocks this movie out. She gives, I think, one of the best close-ups I have ever seen in a movie. Hmm. Like, it's the best one I've seen since, I think, Nicole Kidman in Birth. Just like there's that moment toward the end of the film where all this stuff is happening and the camera just stays on her face and she's telling you everything you needed to know, a few things you didn't even want to know, and it's devastating. And she's just extraordinary and so natural and so powerful and is this sort of like this vortex of calm for the film in a way, but possessed of her own agency and having this rich interior life despite whatever sort of, you know, societal role she's been placed in. I think she's magnificent. And I love what she does here.
Yeah, she was really like just other level. Every woman in this movie was, I mean, I mentioned before that, you know, Hollywood makes movies, you know, now about like superheroes. I feel like all of these women, this is like a superhero story about them. Because just
Marina de Tavira is the mother.
No, she's incredible too. Did it stand out to you that all of the men were garbage?
Yes. Yes, I love that. That was great.
Ignacio, the driver, who was always right there, I was like, huh.
To a comical effect,
so,
almost.
So men are terrible. Yeah. That's, I mean, not news to me, but...
One last question before we wrap it up. Something that we've talked about here on the show is, like, when it's a movie that might necessarily focus on a woman... and it's directed by a man, and we've asked ourselves, like, what would this movie have been like if it was directed by a woman? This movie, as I was watching it, I actually never had the thought of, like, what would it be like if a woman was directing this? Because he just felt like so... He also talked to Lebo so much while he was writing this movie to make sure that he could get the history right and get, you know... tell her story the right way. Did any of you have that thought, or do you have that thought, Crisella, when you watch a movie of like, yeah, you're telling my story, but it's not the person who's behind the camera. I can see where the distance is. I can see where it's removed.
I think that a lot, actually. And you know, and for me, it's not even gender. It's when you know that their heart's not in the story. Mm. And I mean that like in any story, you know what I mean? Like you can, like I can watch Back to School. And like, you know what I mean? Yeah. And, but there's heart in that story. Yes. Like, you know what I mean? Like,
absolutely.
Like, you know, like if the story is good and the person directing it actually finds it good, you'll see it translated on screen. Mm. It good work will always be seen. You know, I think that a lot of times, especially now, you see a lot of like a turnover. And a lot of like going drawing from the same well. Mm-hmm. So, you know, it's that thing where it's hard to get the heart of something when you might not be aware that you no longer have that heart.
Yeah. Yeah. That makes sense.
I was really impressed when you have the big sort of love scene between Cleo and the, you know, future deadbeat Fermin.
Yes.
I appreciated all the male nudity. I think a lot of male directors would have shied away from that. And I was like, okay, yeah, well, you're not male gazing me.
You know, and I think that was actually interesting. The nudity in the movie shows you that nudity doesn't have to be bad. You know, like
or sexual.
Yeah, yeah. That's what I mean. Is that, you know, like whenever you think of nudity, like there's like parents that will say something, blah, blah, blah. But in that instance, I wasn't like, oh, that mean.
You
know, so it was actually kind of cool because you realize that there was no sexuality. There was no anything. It's just this person, the way they are.
Yeah.
And it's a nice reminder because, again, we don't get that a lot in movies right now.
Yeah, absolutely.
And it always takes me out when there's like the sheet up to the armpits or
the L-shaped sheet.
Exactly. Yeah. Or just like the woman wearing a bra where you're like, you would never wear a bra right now.
You know what happens when you get home? You take your bra off. You definitely don't have it on at that stage.
And I got no dog in that hunt, but it's like, it makes me call bullshit.
I go to sleep every night, pose like a woman in every movie.
In case
I'm dead in my sleep, they're going to be like, she was a real woman.
False eyelashes on.
I know. Yeah. Perfume, everything. I did everything, just in case.
Now, this is a movie that you can literally go see it in the theater right now. You can watch it at home, or you can choose not to see it.
How so dare you?
I'm just giving the options. I'm just saying what we do. But I'll start with you now, Drea. Should people screen Roma, stream Roma, or skip it?
Screen it. Screen it if you can.
Did everybody here see it in the theater?
No, I saw it at home.
You saw it at home,
yeah.
Okay.
I saw it projected.
Mm. I saw it projected, and then I saw it on my laptop.
Stella, how dare you?
I know. I'm busy.
Listen, but see, that's fair. I think everyone needs to see it.
Bingo.
Yes.
If you can see it big, it's one of those that's really hard to convey, again, how much visual information is in this film. Like, it's got action. I mean, it's action, adventure, intrigue. But, like, there's... But in a real slow, don't let me throw you off.
No. Slow adventure.
Yeah, slow.
When it happens,
but
this
it
is
really
a movie
does.
Where, like, when the coffee cup, like, when a coffee cup moves, you go, whoa, they just moved a coffee cup.
What are they trying to say with that coffee cup?
Yeah, absolutely. Alonzo.
I agree. If you can screen it. But if stream it is the only option, absolutely stream it. But stream it in a room that is ideally the lights are off. Your fucking phone is off. Your computer is in another room. You are not going to be distracted because this is a movie that you need to accommodate its pace. It is not going to accommodate yours. And you need to take a full plunge. So, believe me.
But you'll want to.
I watched 37 Hallmark movies while doing four other things, and I could, and that's what they're designed to do. But this movie, you just got to be there for it and only it when you're watching it.
Yeah. Grisela, what say you? Screen it, stream it, or skip it?
I would actually love to screen it. I want to go see it in the theater, having seen it streaming. Mm-hmm. And I did it the way you said it.
Nice.
I am that person. When I watch something streaming, I treat it like I did when I was a kid, where I don't have a phone, I don't have my laptop. I really sit and watch it because I feel like I understand the work, the effort that goes into putting it in, that I want to give it the respect it deserves. You know, having seen it, I saw it this morning really early because, you know, why wake up early? And it was dark. I didn't, you know, and I wanted to see it because I knew it was in black and white. I wanted to see it in the dark. And afterwards, I thought, my God, like, I need to see this in the theater because now you know. If I can feel this in my apartment,
right.
You know, where I know my Nintendo Switch is right there, you know what I mean? I want to go to the theater and experience it. I mean, but definitely, I think that, yes, it's like Alonso was saying, it's like you really have to, you have to not be distracted by anything because it's a slow moving story in a good way where sometimes, though, you can miss something. Despite it being so slow, and honestly, you just need to get that. You need to take that plunge and really accept the time as it's passing in the way that he decided to make it pass. That's the best way to do it. Screen, stream, and then if you have to, just ignore it. But I don't know why you would.
I can't stress enough how you have to see this movie in a theater. Like, screen it. I saw it at my favorite theater, at the Vista Theater here in Los Angeles. And, I mean, just from the opening, I just knew, like, oh, we're all in here. It just visually just looks amazing. The cinematography in it. I mean, we didn't really talk about how funny this movie is as well. Mm. Just some really great laughs in it. It's watching a movie with a smile on my face. God damn it. I love when that happens. And I will say, stream it as well. I was going to try and watch it again before we came into tape today. But I probably will start watching some of it again tonight and then finish watching it, tomorrow if I don't pass out. But this is really, I don't know if it was my favorite movie of the year, but I need to choose one of my babies right now. And then right now, this is the one that's leading because it was just goddamn great. Roma. Yeah, go see it, y'all. We're going to take a break, though. When we come back, we are going to... We're gonna cast ourselves in our own little biopic. Damn, Drea, aren't you looking forward to that? Yeah, girl. That's what's up. All right, we're going to take a break. We'll be right back, y'all.
Hey everybody, this is J. Keith Van Stratton, host of Go Fact Yourself, a live game show here in the Maximum Fun Network. On Go Fact Yourself, we take the smartest people we know and make them look dumb.
Paul, by the way, how much do you know about chicken husbandry?
You gotta give him that grain.
All right.
Gotta give him that grain.
And then smart again.
What future Hall of Fame pitcher for the Cleveland Indians became the first active player to enlist?
Bob Feller.
Oh, okay.
We've got me, co-host Helen Hong, plus celebrity guests and actual surprise experts.
All right, we have an expert on hand who can tell us for sure.
Is it Alan Havey?
Helen, who do we have tonight?
Alan Havey!
Alan Havey!
In the coming weeks, you can hear guests like Maria Bamford, Tom Bergeron, Paul F. Tompkins, Janet Varney, and Grant Imahara. Check us out on the first and third Friday of every month here on the Maximum Fun Network.
Well, Welcome back to Who Shall Ya? I'm your host, Ricky Carmona. Joining me in the studio today are
Alonzo Duralde,
Drea Clark,
Cristel Alonso.
We just talked about Roma, Alfonso Cuarón's very deeply personal film. So we thought we were going to just kind of follow his same path. We are going to look inward as well. We're going to put together a little movie about ourselves. We're going to make our own little personal biopic. We're going to answer the following questions. Who would play us in a film? What would the genre be? And who would direct it? Drea, you've been looking forward to this so much. So I thought we would start with you.
Okay, I've got it. Okay,
I don't think we need to answer these questions in this order as well. I don't want to make it too confusing for you or too many rules. So whatever hits you first.
Whatever gets me.
Yeah.
Who should play me in a film does involve slight time travel.
Okay.
But
Julie Christie.
Dame Judi Dench.
That's my answer.
You've heard of Grace Kelly, I'm sure. Yes. Mine is a very particular circa Look Who's Talking Kirstie Alley.
Oh, yes.
Yes.
Those are the begrudging nods I'm looking for.
I'm trying to imagine her blonde, but it's doable.
It's doable.
No,
everyone looks good blonde. And that's a universal truth. And that's the title of my film. Everyone looks good blonde, a universal truth. And the genre would obviously be, I was going to be jokey and say action, but no way, man, slapstick. A good, speaking of Christmas in Connecticut, Barbara Stanwyck, a hijinks sort of farcical comedy.
Slamming doors.
Mm. Oh, yeah, big time. A lot of slamming doors. Definitely the thing where you think someone is someone else. So, everyone meets Ricky and thinks he's my butler. And Ricky's just why do people keep handing me their coats? And it just keeps going along. And then all of a sudden at the end, he gets, J-Lo's coat. She's like, keep it. And then you buy a car. It's great. It's a great movie.
Oh, yeah.
All these ideas are copywritten me. Don't take them.
Cristela, who would play you in a movie?
Me.
Of course.
Come on.
Yes.
It's actually,
if anybody has the closest potential of just making it happen.
I wrote my own TV show about my life. Why quit now?
Yeah. It'll be like that Joan and Melissa Rivers story movie.
I would play both Joan and Melissa. Yes. But I think the genre, actually, I would love to do something that's a little like a comic book.
Ooh.
Because I love comic books, I love sci-fi, and I love the fact that if I have control to tell my story, I would love to indulge something that the industry doesn't normally let me do in real life anyway. Mm. So I think that it would be fun to do it. And I think, and also not in a Marvel,
I was going to say, is this an origin story?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Not in a Marvel way. Also, Unbreakable? Unbreakable is a very weird way to tell a superhero story.
It's kind of also Scott Pilgrim. You know what I mean? I think that's a fun way of telling a story because you have moments where you can be sad, you can be funny, but there's also this other weird element that you don't normally see in stories.
Yeah. Scott Pilgrim has a lot of great visual elements too. Literally the story is jumping out.
Fun is that? You know? But it only, I would love that. And directing, I don't know, because for me, I'm terrible with directors. I'll tell you this much.
Okay.
I have no interest in directing. I know that about myself.
Why do you have no interest in directing?
Because, for me, it's just not something that interests me. So for me, some people will say, I want to direct. I'm like, if you have that in you, do it. Yeah. But I don't, and I would rather not try to take away someone else's dream.
Ah.
You know what I mean?
Sure.
But I really don't want to direct. It's interesting,
though, because you have written your own show, and you've starred in your own show.
Yeah.
But you don't want to be the one person who
respects your boundaries.
I'm intrigued.
There's a lot of people that, they can parlay into directing, and if they really want to do it, then do it. But honestly, you see so many people. My job as a stand-up is to write and perform. Yep. And I got lucky enough to be able to do that, both. But, I also think of people that want to direct and how hard it is to break into directing. And it's like, why would I, on a whim, try to direct something when it's somebody's love and passion since they were a child? You know what I mean?
Yeah,
for
sure.
For me, but there's I appreciate directors so much that, you know, I would say that I would probably, if I had to pick one, I would actually pick Edgar Wright.
Is that
right?
You know
what I mean? Just because, again, it is farcical. There's like farce to it. There's a seriousness, which makes it hilarious. But they have heart.
Mm-hmm.
They all have heart. Yeah. So I bet, you know, if I had to pick one, I just thought of that right now because there's too many directors out there.
Yeah. Are there other directors you like? Like now that you say Edgar Wright, I'm like, so would you want like a Michel Gondry as well?
Oh, yeah.
Like
no, totally.
Tries,
you know,
to do Michel the same thing.
Yeah. You know, I always feel that it depends on the story and how they translate it. You know, but like it's so much fun. But also, I wouldn't mind discovering somebody and giving them their first shot because that's when they're most hungry. It's like a band with the first album. You know what I mean?
Yes.
It's like you try decades to get it noticed that you're like, I want to get them when they're fucking hungry.
Hell yeah. Oh, the El Mero Mero movie, though. The Alonso movie.
Well, you know, I think it would have to be, I want it to be a gay caper heist comedy set at Christmas.
Yes. Yes. Of course.
All the things. Who would play me? I think. I mean, my fallback answer is sort of, I'm thinking Seth Rogen, maybe?
Ooh, I like that.
I think that seems like it's too far a stretch.
Okay.
And I would totally want Almodovar to direct it.
Ooh.
Oh, my God, I want to watch that movie.
Yes.
GoFundMe. We'll be up after this podcast.
Let's make it happen, people.
Well, I went the route of, as far as like somebody playing me, I kind of want to do a Moonlight type version where I want three actors playing me at different points in my life. So when I'm a kid, I want my man, Emmanuel Lewis Webster.
Who's like, what, 60 now?
I mean, like back in the day, though. Back in the day.
I introduced the time travel clause. Thank you.
Oh, okay. Thank you. Thank you. Yeah, I'm surprised y'all didn't, like, consider, like, aging and, like, makeup.
But at least you said you were time traveling off the bat.
Yeah,
Ricky's just like, I want Emmanuel Lewis to play young me.
Yeah, that's young me. That's young me. High school me, Jaleel White.
Jesus.
You know what I'm saying? You guys need to see pictures of me in high school. I look like Jaleel White.
I do not think we need to see
that. You've already painted a word picture. I'm fully in.
I think it's pretty clear.
I would have been surprised if you told me anything else,
frankly. Jaleel White.
Now, I'm thinking the same way with Crisella, where like I do like performing, so I would love the opportunity to tell my own story. Me doing it, or if Denzel can, like, you know, answer the phone, fuck it. Fine, Denzel. Fine. You can do it. What would the genre be? Man, I'm surprised at how close our answers were. Like, I am a fan of the fantastical.
Yeah.
I like the Edgar Wright aspect. But I also, I mean, I just love Spike Lee so much.
Oh,
I love that he can, I mean, he kind of, like, usually sticks to drama, but when he's funny, he really hits the jokes in the movie, so. I'd love Spike to direct my shit.
That's a cool one.
You know?
Why not make it a musical, Ricky?
I mean,
what are your feelings about musicals? Why
he
is
hates
it?
Them, and the irony like is, them. It's more likely that a movie about Ricky's life would be a musical than any of the rest of us.
I have the soundtrack. Like, it's a 3-CD soundtrack. You know what you
one
want
for each character?
Why? Boots Riley.
Yeah, see, what I'm saying
Boots
there
Riley.
Boots
go.
Riley.
Oh.
Oh, that'd be amazing.
Oh.
That'd be amazing.
Yeah.
I'd be very
That's
much.
That's a second
into that.
GoFundMe after.
It can be called, sorry to bother you with my terrible jokes.
There's the hater. There he is. My man. All right. Well, I like that. Man. Well, you know, our movies will be on Netflix next year. Netflix be handing out,
but
handing
if
out movie deals.
You can see them in a theater. Do see them in a theater.
Yes. Yes, sir. Yes, sir.
Oh, callback. I love it.
All right, y'all. It is time for staff picks. Before we go every week, we ask the panel to tell us about a movie we think folks should check out, any movie at all. Cristela, what do you think people should be watching right now?
Mine's going to be super random. The Muppets Take Manhattan.
Yes!
Solid. You're amongst friends. You're amongst
Muppets
friends.
The Muppets Take Manhattan, just because if you're not into the holiday movies, it does have like a peppy, joyful, like a holiday vibe just because it's happiness. But I also love the appreciation that Jim Henson during that era You could be sad, which there's a song saying goodbye, which is heartbreaking. But then you also have fun songs like somebody's getting married at the end. And it's just like a nice way of incorporating musicals, which you love, Ricky.
And I love The Wiz. We don't talk about how much I love The Wiz on the show.
I think we do.
You know, but you also have moments that, like, the genius moment of, like, Joan Rivers working the makeup counter. You know, like, it's a fun one. And I think that I think it still holds up well. And you can watch it with anybody. It can be nostalgia. You can show it to your kids. You can show it. It's fun. Muppets Take Manhattan.
Let me try this. Ocean Breeze soap. It's like going on an ocean voyage, except there's no boat, so you don't actually go anywhere.
That's why he's named Alonzo.
Yes, see it. You got it, yo. You got it.
Oh, my God. Bill? Fill her up.
Bill? Gil?
Fill up.
Oh, my
God. Yes, I love it. I love it. Treya, what do you got for the people?
I feel like this might have been an earlier pick when it had a small theatrical, but it just recently came out on digital. It's a film called All About Nina, and it is about a female stand-up comic. It's directed by Eva Vives, and Mary Elizabeth Winstead plays Nina, and she, the Common plays the love interest, and he looks like Common, so bonus.
What a stretch for him.
You're automatically in good hands. But no, I really enjoyed it. It's super dark. There's a lot of female stand-up can often be wedged into like the quirky eccentric or the like crass overly sexual, and she really leans into it and her growth in it and sort of acknowledging the kind of person she is and what she's gone through and the sort of trauma in her life, but also has like the comedy element of it. I think it's on Netflix. It's definitely available digitally.
Is it on Netflix now?
Yeah.
Is that right?
It might just be like iTunes and stuff, but you can check.
Okay.
All About Eva. Nope.
Nina.
Eva's the director. All About Nina is the film. Check it out.
Sweet.
Word. Well, if you go over to Netflix, you know, of course they have Other Side of the Wind, which is the final film by Orson Welles that they helped get completed. They have They'll Love Me When I'm Dead, which is the documentary about the making of that film. They even have this other great film called A Final Cut for Orson, which is about the lengthy process of reconstructing that film and, you know, looping in the dialogue and making it finished. But because of all that, they've also decided to dig into some older Welles, including Touch of Evil, which is this amazing noir film that he made for Universal. And it's one of those things where he was unhirable. Albert Zugsmith, who was kind of a, you know, did a lot of Mamie Van Doren movies, decided to like hire him for this movie. They, of course, clashed about everything. He didn't get to have his original cut released, but then years later they did a reconstruction of his cut based on like a 38-page memo of how he wanted the movie to look. So the film, the version you see now, was the one that Welles wanted to see it. Like, there's no credits over the extraordinary opening tracking shot. It super holds up, even with Charlton Heston playing a Mexican.
Brown face. Brown face in that movie.
It is a dynamite movie. It's so much tension, so much like moments where you can tell Hitchcock, working on Psycho, was taking notes about like motels and things. You know, do not sleep on Touch of Evil. It is one of the Welles masterpieces that you got to see.
Warren, that's what's up. My pick is actually kind of a little bit of an experiment, but it works because Roma was in black and white. I was at a holiday party last night, and someone put on Batman Returns, and we watched Batman Returns in black and white, and it was a completely new experience. I was speaking to a friend of mine, or he was just telling me, he's like, oh yeah, a lot of Tim Burton's early movies, he actually, I don't know, the urban legend is that a lot of his movies, he in his mind, like, just already pictured them in black and white, even though he shot them in color, but always under the guise of, like, these should be seen in black and white. And Batman Returns, which I'm generally, you know, I go back and forth with that movie. Some years I love it. Some years I'm like, get the fucking penguin out of there. Actually, every year I'm like
Oswald
that. I'm like,
Cobblepot? Yeah. Not Oswald Cobblepot.
No disrespect, Oswald, but a little bit of disrespect. A little bit. And it really was just like in the same way in Roma, just like the way the shadows hit in this movie, the way the light hits in this movie, like that last sequence, where it's like him and Catwoman going at it and the penguin, and the way like the light is hitting everything in the zoo. It just I can't tell you enough. Like, watch the movie that way. So, and it's also, can we stop talking so much about how Die Hard is a Christmas movie?
It is.
It is.
I'll tell you why.
It totally is. But like, the argument just it goes on forever and ever. And it's like, there's also other Christmas movies out there that aren't necessarily that, you
Batman,
know.
Batman Returns is amazing. I spent a lot of money at Blockbuster on Batman Returns.
So I would tell you all to...
it's in my book.
what book is that, Alonzo?
Oh, it's January. Nobody
cares. Cancel that. Yeah. It sucks that in 2019 books were made illegal, but here we are.
By the way, just say that being in this room with Alonso makes me feel like an idiot because he's like his movie choices are always so brilliant. Like he's like da-da-da. And
he's
I'm like,
professional.
Porky's is cool. If you like Porky's.
If we ever get married, I will take your last name.
Yes. It's like Johnson & Johnson, but Latino.
I want to say, hey, thank you, everybody, for joining us in this new year. Thank you, Cristela, for being our first guest.
Thank you.
Year.
Yay!
Fantastic.
2019. Starting the year
pesos.
Right.
The year of the peso bag.
Your special is on Netflix right now, Lower Classy. Yes. Where else can people see you? I know you've mentioned an upcoming tour. It might be happening.
Yes, I'm starting a tour. It starts in February. I have a book coming out in September of this year, 2019. And the tour leads up to the book release. And I will be doing about 40 cities or so this year. So you can go on my website, CristelaAlonzo.com, or Twitter and Instagram at Cristela9, and Facebook, you know, let's go collude with Russia. I don't go there. So there you go.
That's the right move. That's the right move. I like it. If you like what you're hearing, please leave us that good review on Apple Podcasts. 5-star reviews usually get a shout on the show. We don't have any reviews to read for you right now.
Make that your New Year's resolution that you're going to give us a 5-star review.
Thank you, sir. Ooh. Thank you. Tell a friend about the show, all that. Thank you, Drea, Alonzo. Always a pleasure, y'all. Happy New Year. Happy New Year, Feli. Año Nuevo. If you got a comment or suggestion about this week's show, tweet at us at WhoShoutYaPod. Send us an email at WhoShoutYaMaximumFun.org. You can leave us a message on the Who Shout line if you got thoughts about Roma that you want to share with us. The number is WSY803-1664. Also call in if you have any recommendations or compliments. We love all that. Our producer is Casey O'Brien. Our senior producer is Laura Swisher. This is a production of MaximumFun.org. And that's what's up in 2019, yo! Boom. That's a show,
in
dog.
The 1-9.
In the 1-9, yo.
Oh, my God.
MaximumFun.org.
Comedy and culture.
Artist owned.
Listener supported.